Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Wednesday, 25 April 2012. Jed Babin sitting in again for Dr. Michael Savage. Dr. Savage, thank you again for lending me your microphone today. Ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot to talk about and not a lot of time to do it. You think 3 hours is a lot of time? Well, let me just tell you what we're going to be packing in to these 3 hours. Yep, we're going to be talking about Mitt Romney's big day yesterday. Things are wrapped. Newt Gingrich is finally getting out. So where does the campaign go from here? What do you think the campaign should look like from here? Second, there was a very big event yesterday in the United States Senate that you probably don't know about. Something happened on the big debt ceiling deal that was negotiated last August. Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama, is right on top of this. This is a wake-up call, a really serious wake-up call for the Tea Party, and you're going to hear about it today on the Savage Nation because you're not going to hear about it anywhere else, and because I think it's extremely important that all of you out there, not just the Tea Partiers, all of you understand exactly what's going on in the lead-up to this election. Well, going on from there, more still on the Savage Nation today. We're going to be talking about how the Labor Department is outlawing kids working on the family farm. You heard it right. The bureaucracy is so out of control, they're now going to be interfering with 4-H projects. You just got to listen to this, ladies and gentlemen, to believe it. Well, there's another bad day today for the Solicitor General. Obama's lawyers aren't doing too good at the Supreme Court. We'll talk a little bit about the Arizona immigration case. And last, if we have time, we're going to get around to what our friends at the New York Times are tutting about now. There is an American clothing manufacturer that actually has the audacity to be making clothing that actually is stylish and helps you carry your concealed weapon. I think it's a really cool idea. But right now, I mean, the lead story on this show, and you need to check it out on michaelsavage.com. Ladies and gentlemen, I really am almost speechless in terms of explaining how bad this is. There are so many things that have come out of the Obama administration over the past 3 years, so many stupid things, so many dishonest things, so many economically damaging things, but so many things on top of all that that make us less safe, that damage our national security, that talk about leaks, they talk about things, they've released prisoners back to Gitmo prisoners back to the battlefield that have gone back to terrorism. They've coddled and cuddled the Islamist world. They've coddled and cuddled an awful lot of terrorist powers like Iran, and the president talks tough and does nothing. But right now, we have something coming out of the Obama administration that is really very hard to believe. We're at 800-449-8255. Let me just read a couple of paragraphs to you. And again, you can find this on michaelsavage.com. There are a couple other stories out there. This is a story I have. Is by Michael Hirsch. And quote from this story, it is no longer the case, in other words, that every Islamist is seen as a potential accessory to terrorists. The war on terror is over, one senior State Department official who works on Middle East issues told me. Now that we've killed most of al-Qaeda, now that people have come to see legitimate means of expression, people who once might have gone into al-Qaeda see an opportunity for legitimate Islamism, end quote. Let's unpack that a little bit. Okay, now you have a senior State Department official, who knows, Hillary Clinton, somebody, you know, her immediate staff, saying the war on terror is over. What does that mean, the war on terror is over, or does that mean that the United States has quit fighting the war on terror? I think it's the latter. Now, if the war on terror is over, you'd think that the other side might have a vote in that or might agree to that. Well, obviously they have a vote in that, and they haven't agreed to that. It's so obvious. Even the Obama people should see that. But now they say the war on terror is over. It means we're stopping fighting. And it might be something that, oh, some of the following might find it advantageous for them to continue fighting while we say the war on terror is over. Well, how about the Taliban? How about the Iran mullahs? And how about all the terrorist groups that they sponsor, like Hezbollah? Oh, that's just one of those groups. Hezbollah just happens to be the Iranian-sponsored Lebanese terrorist group that has more American blood on its hands than any except al-Qaeda. Well, and then you've got Hamas. And then you, oh, let's not just go past Hamas too quickly. Wasn't there something? Oh, yeah, I read the other day the Palestinians have sentenced a fellow Palestinian to death for the crime of selling his home to Jews. Yeah, okay. And Hamas is in the background there? Yeah, okay. So some of these people are not agreeing that the war on terror is over because they're still fighting it. When the Obama administration says the war on terror is over, what does that mean? It means that we are quitting the fight. And that's what it means. It means a damage to our national security. It means a dereliction of duty. And I cannot express myself strongly enough, ladies and gentlemen. This is something that if I were Mitt Romney, God forbid, if I should ever run for office, but if I were Mitt Romney and I'd seen this or my staff had seen this, I would have made a speech today about this. Today. And this is the kind of thing that Mitt Romney needs to do. He needs to react quickly and strongly. The war on terror is not over until both sides agree. Just because we say the war on terror is over doesn't mean the other side that doesn't mean they quit fighting. Hamas. We left off there. How about Lashkar-e-Taiba, one of the many groups that the Pakistanis sponsor in terms of terrorism? Well, and we could go on and on and on. Al-Qaeda itself, yeah, this clown in the State Department, whether it's Hillary Clinton or one of her minions, they say, oh, well, now that we've killed most of Al-Qaeda, people who might have gone into Al-Qaeda see an opportunity for legitimate Islamism. That's the other half of this statement. Islamism. We have gone down a road of euphemisms that have destroyed American national security for too doggone long. We started out with President Bush saying very well and very correctly that great speech he gave about 10 days after 9/11, you're either with us or against us, okay? That has morphed into something, well, first we were talking about terrorists. We're talking about Islamic terrorists because that's what they are. They are propelled by an Islamic ideology, and they are terrorists. They kill civilians intentionally. They don't fight in uniform. They are terrorists. Even by the definitions of the Geneva Convention, they are terrorists. And we went from that to, well, extremists. And then we went to fundamentalists. And now we're getting back to the point where we're talking about Islamists and legitimate. They're all the same. An Islamist, if you look it up in the dictionary, I mean, I will even allow this one time if you use Wikipedia, which if you worked for me would be a firing offense because it's so inaccurate. But even if you look at Wikipedia, you look at Wikipedia, it says fundamentalist Islam. Fundamentalist means intolerance of other religions. It means jihad. So what do you have? You trace it back. Islamism goes to fundamentalism, radical Islam, jihadism. It's terrorism that they're talking about. And what this clown in the State Department is talking about, we have now said, well, all right, the war on terror is over, and we're going to have legitimate Islamism, a.k.a. terrorism. This is the view of the Obama administration. Again, Mitt Romney ought to be jumping all over this. He should be saying this is wrong. It is bizarre. This war on terror is not over because the terrorists haven't quit, because we haven't won, because terrorism is still just an existential threat against the United States of America and our way of life. And this is what we get from the Obama administration. And somebody has to call them on it. I'm calling them on it right now. Do you agree? Do you agree that there is some form of legitimate Islamism? Do you agree that Islamism is different from terrorism? If you do, you ought to be one of the people in the Obama administration. And you'll be probably one of the people who votes for these guys this fall. I do not agree, and I don't think you do either. 800-449-8255. And the point here is you can't say the war on terror is over if one side is still fighting. If one side is still fighting and we do not resist, what happens? We lose. To me, this is a surrender document. This is a way of saying we give up. Terrorism, you go do what you want to do. This is almost like, well, you know, in a way it's worse. If you remember way back when Jean-Francois Kerry was running against George Bush, and he was talking about, well, you know, we can reduce terrorism to a tolerable level. Only a Massachusetts Democrat could come up with that sort of a theoretical approach, bizarre as it was. But that's the same kind of thing. This is a step worse. At this point, I'd trade Obama for John Kerry. And that's saying something. The point really here is that this president and this bunch of clowns he has around him really are not interested in protecting this country. And when you see them say the war on terror is over, they're waving a white flag. They're not parsing out the dangers to our country. And this comes on top of all of the things we talk about every time I'm on this show. These people are not interested in defending America. That's why we're going to have massive defense cuts. We already have massive defense cuts in absence of any analysis of the threat. We don't know whether we're cutting fat or muscle. We do know that a senior State Department official says the war on terror is over, and now there's going to be a means of expression of legitimate Islamism. They're ready to legitimate terrorism? 800-449-8255. This is Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. We're going to take a quick break and come right back to your calls. Do you think the war on terror is over if we quit and the other side's still fighting? Jed Babin, stick with us.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. Don't forget to order your copy of Trickle Down Tyranny today. But we're getting right now a lot of calls, and we're coming right to them. We're talking about this absolutely bizarre, stupid, and enormously damaging statement from a State Department official to columnist Michael Hirsch, who says, this guy says now, the war on terror is over. And now that we've killed most of al-Qaeda, now that people have come to see legitimate means of expression, people who once might have gone into al-Qaeda see an opportunity for legitimate Islamism, end quote, a.k.a. terrorism, Islamism being terrorism. The State Department, the Obama administration, says that we are now stopping fighting the war on terror. The other side doesn't agree. Does that mean the war is over? I don't think so. Let's go right to your calls. How about line two? David in Michigan, thanks for calling the Savage Nation, sir. You're on the air.
Yes, if the statement that the war on terror is over is true, then we should start dismantling the Department of Homeland Security.
Oh, how about TSA? How about TSA? Yeah, we can stop shaking down little old ladies for costume jewelry and let people keep going on airplanes. You know, maybe put your shoes on and you don't have to take them off anymore, right? The war on terror is over. This is so stupid, David. Only the Obama administration could come up with this.
Right.
Well, hey, good point, good call. I mean, obviously, we're not going to do away with the Department of Homeland and Security. I mean, it's a job sinecure for an awful lot of, that's redundant, a sinecure for an awful lot of bureaucrats. But the point of the matter is these people in the Obama administration are saying, we're leaving the battlefield. The war on terror is over. The terrorists are still out there. They're still plotting and scheming. I mean, how can you say the war on terror is over when the Taliban are still trying to kill American troops on the field every single day in Afghanistan? Again, back to your calls. How about line one, Scott in New York? Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you. In addition to the TSA and the Homeland Security Department, we can now repeal the National Defense Authorization Act and stop watching returning soldiers as being terrorists and people like me who might have 2 weeks of canned goods and some ammunition.
Oh, my gosh, you got canned goods and ammunition. You're obviously a crazy wacko. You're probably also a veteran, and you're probably also just like me.
Well, I'm thinking about becoming a legitimate Islamist now.
Well, don't do that. Don't do that. I mean, that would go to the dark side. I mean, you're still on the good side of things here. You know, I have weapons. I have canned goods. I have, you know, all sorts of food in the house. I don't even know what's there. But the basic point is this is a surrender. Ladies and gentlemen, do you agree? Is this a surrender document when the administration is saying, even through a senior State Department official, that the war on terror is over? I think that's a surrender. Do you agree, Scott?
I think it might be an appearance of a surrender, but it's more of a propaganda piece leading up to the election, I think.
And well, everything's going to be that way. Yeah, but yeah, everything is that way. There's not anything this administration does, down to the lowliest GS-3 in the General Services Administration, that does anything between now and November 6th that's not politically motivated. So I'll stipulate that. But if this is a trial balloon, man, this is a dumb balloon. This is a water balloon. It's going to burst all over them. How can you say the war on terror is over when there's acts of terrorism against Americans plotted and schemed and carried out almost every day? Every time American Marines and American Army guys go out on patrol in Afghanistan, when they're shot at by the Taliban, that's acts of terrorism. When you see what's going on, when people are trying to kid, you've got Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, you've got Al-Qaeda in, well, covering Yemen and all the rest of these people in the administration are just not understanding. Or they're, no, that's not true. I think they understand. I think they understand, and they're willfully ignorant of the fact that this is still an existential threat against the United States. Let's go to line three, Margaret in California. Thanks for calling in, ma'am. You're on the Savage Nation.
All right. Thank you for taking my call, Ned. And I read the same article that you're discussing this today, and the point that got my ire up was that the administration official said that we would have to start talking with moderate Muslim groups like the Muslim Brotherhood. And to me, the Muslim Brotherhood is not a moderate Muslim group. And if that's what they're thinking is moderate, we're in big trouble.
Well, we are in big trouble. You remember last week or the week before, was it? I think about 10 days ago, the Muslim Brotherhood delegation was welcomed into the White House. They were welcomed. And you're absolutely right. The Muslim Brotherhood is not, repeat, not a moderate group. They are trying to do a stealth jihad in the United States right here. The Savage Nation, Jed Babin, contributing editor for the American Spectator, sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage today. Be right back to your calls. We're at 800-449-8255. Stick with us.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage. We're talking about this bizarre and extremely dangerous and damaging statement by a senior State Department official to the effect that, well, to quote, the war on terror is over, end quote. And also this gentleman or lady, who knows, it might have been Hillary, says that people who might have gone into Al-Qaeda will now look for an opportunity for a legitimate Islamism, end quote, legitimate terrorism. That's where we're thinking. That's why we're now leaving. We're now leaving the battlefield. We're taking your calls at 800-449-8255. I wonder, ladies and gentlemen, this State Department official, the State Department, as you know, has the authority to designate groups and organizations as foreign terrorist organizations. I went and looked it up today. There are 50 organizations on that list, including, well, Hezbollah, Hamas, Lashkar-e-Taiba, blah, blah, all the rest of these guys, Islamic Jihad. I wonder, did they take a poll, you think, of the 50 organizations? Did they take a poll? Do you think the war on terror is over? I bet if they had, they would not have gotten a single positive response. All right, let's go right back to your calls. Line 8, Stephen in New York, you're on the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Jed. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah. You know, I think that the official was trying to make people feel safer when they said that, knowing that also it could also lead to a campaign win for, you know, our current president, and also just to give leadership to the people of the United States so that they could feel safe going to stores, going to work, you know, working with the economy, even travel. Because, you know, this whole idea of terrorism being over will never end. It's you know, you might call it terrorism, but it's also
Wait a minute. What do you call it, Stephen? Whoa. Wait a minute. You're not going to get away with that. I mean, you're sitting there saying, you know, they're trying to make Americans feel safe. They're lying, Stephen. You can't say that the war on terror is over when it's not.
Well,
and what do you call it? What do you call it? Terrorism. What do you call it?
Terrorism is, like you said, those groups in that on that list. You know, they feel they want to take things to radical extremes because, quite frankly, you know...
No, they want to take things... They want to kill people, Stephen. They want to kill you. They want to kill me. They want to kill America's way of life. I mean, you're using too many euphemisms. I mean, Stephen, you must be a moderate. Or are you a closet liberal?
We can say that we won it because we know that they would never win.
How can you say that we won it? These guys are out there right now running free with arms, plotting and scheming. The only reason they haven't attacked us is we've killed a lot of them. And, you know, since 9/11, we've managed to keep them at bay. But to say the war on terror is over, I mean, Stephen, it's just not factually correct.
Within ourselves, I believe that we can say we won. Maybe not everybody.
Yeah, Stephen, we didn't win. In fact, we're losing. In fact, when we pull out of Afghanistan, Afghanistan will revert to what it was before 9/11, if not something worse. I'd say good call, thanks for it. But, you know, Stephen, you really got to look at the facts. Go read a few books about it. Just go back and read Rashid's old book, which is old, 10 years old, whatever, called Taliban, and learn about this stuff. Read John Backett Glubb's War in the Desert from 1962. Ladies and gentlemen, the war on terror is not over until both sides agree, and one side has to be defeated. That can't be us. Let's go right back to your calls. Line 10, Sam in Texas. Thanks for calling into the Savage Nation, sir. Welcome aboard.
Well, thank you very much. I enjoy the program, and I listen to it almost every day.
Good man.
Thank you. I think that the president can now say that with his administration, he won the war during his presidency. And also another thing might...
Whoa. How do you say that? I mean, how did he win?
The war on terror
is still going on. Oh, okay. All right.
No, he didn't win. We know he
He's just going to say it. Sure. Okay, yeah.
He's just going to make a bold claim, a boast. But you know what? I think that this might also invite terrorism to occur on our soil. And I think also that if anything, not even close to 9/11 ever occurs again, Obama can declare martial law. And I think that's what he's going to do to get the presidency if he feels like that's his last card.
No, you know, I hear this from people time and time again, and, you know, I just have to disagree. I just think this country is too big and too strong, and our constitutional protections are still there. You know, whether Eric Holder wants to ignore the Constitution or not, whether Barack Obama wants to try to do something like that, this country is just not going to go along with that. And this country will prevent that through the proper constitutional channels. The courts would stop it. Congress would stop it. There are ways to stop that. You know, I dislike Barack Obama intensely, and I wish him every political misfortune that could befall a man. But the basic point here is we are not going to see things go that badly. Now, look, if nuclear terrorism, God forbid, happened in this country, there would have to be martial law. That would be something that would destroy us from a very deep level, and it might be years, if ever, that we could recover. But short of that, Sam, I just don't agree. I don't think that Obama is going to get away with that. I don't think he's going to be able to do something like that. And, you know, let's just concentrate on winning in November. Let's concentrate on getting everybody we know out to vote. And all these problems will go away, because Barack Obama will retire somewhere, become a constitutional law professor again, and, you know, have a long and happy life the heck out of the White House. All right, good call, Sam. Let's go to line 3, Mason in Pennsylvania. Welcome aboard the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, thanks for having me. I just wanted to comment. I was in the Marine Corps 20 years, and my first 4 years of it was with Jimmy Carter. And to me, this is almost like Carter all over again times 10. No one can be naive enough to think that the war on terror is over, and I don't know what they're trying to pull.
Well, God bless you for your service. I have a soft place in my heart and my head for the God bless you jarheads. My father was one, but you know that you're right. I mean, this guy is Jimmy Carter. All as a matter of fact, you know, it's almost an insult to Jimmy Carter. You know, Jimmy Carter was a bumbling fool. He was a micromanager. He wanted to do every little thing himself. He didn't trust anybody to do anything. And, you know, I've heard some apocryphal stories. Well, maybe they're not apocryphal, about how he was ordering the movement of individual aircraft in the Desert One failed rescue mission in Iran. But this guy, Obama, is so much worse because he's not dumb. He's not a bumbler. He's doing exactly what he wants to do at exactly the time he wants to do it. He is socializing this country in terms of socialism. and Obamacare and the deficit and all the rest of that. I mean, Mason, you're a Marine, and once a Marine, always a Marine. You guys have hard heads and you have a good view of reality. What would you say to someone, you know, just walk up on the street if you ran into Obama and said, Mr. President, the war on terrorism is not over because, what would you say?
I'd say that if you think the war on terrorism is over, you're out of your mind. Those people are raised to be radical Islamists. They're not raised like you and I. They don't have the same mindset as you and I. And you can't, and you cannot assume that this is over. You have to be on the offensive. You cannot sit back on your heels.
God bless. You know, that's just good common sense from a good Marine. Mason, thank you very much for calling. I salute your service, sir, and please call again sometime soon. Let's go to line two. Terry in Wisconsin. You're on board with the Savage Nation. Jed Babin speaking. Welcome.
Jed, thank you. I'm telling you, this is Vietnam all over again. This is, except it's kind of in reverse. It's like the Viet Cong are on our shores. It's like we declared detente, but the termites are still here. And as long as they can breed, we are going to go down. And I love your callers. They're so wonderful and so remarkable and so articulate. They can see things so big picture. This isn't going to go well for us unless we can take this country back and get rid of the problems and establish freedom again in this country to do what you do best instead of to do what you do worst.
Well, Terry, you're absolutely right, and calm down. I know you're upset, and we all are. And this is exactly what we're in the process of doing right now. We hope Mitt Romney will be as good a candidate as he's capable of being, and we hope that he's going to be able to win in November, but hope is not good enough. So we're going to be out there. I'm going to be out there talking and writing. All the rest of us in the conservative media are going to be out there talking and writing, not just about how good Mitt Romney is, but how dangerous it would be to have another 4 years of Barack Obama. Don't forget, this is the guy when he was visiting with Medvedev a couple of months ago saying, you know, just wait. Just give me some more time. I'll have a lot more flexibility when I'm reelected. Lord only knows what he could do. We know he says we have too many nuclear weapons. We know now that the position of his administration is the war on terror is over, even though the terrorists don't necessarily agree. So what's going to happen in another 4 years of Obama? We don't want to find out. So, Terry, take heart. Go out there. Talk to people. Talk to your friends, your neighbors, your relatives. Be your own little caucus. Be your own little tea party. And just make sure, you know, rent a van. Rent a van on election day and drive people you know to the polls. Well, the people who will vote the right way anyway. Hey, great call. Calm down, Terry. Help is on the way. All right, let's go to line seven. Mo in Houston. Thanks for calling in, sir. This is the Savage Nation.
Hello. I disagree with you, and it's because you're saying that it's a surrender that America is saying the war on terror is over. But
yeah,
it's a war against an abstract concept.
No. This is the mistake, Mo. This is the mistake that George Bush made. This is the mistake that all the Democrats make. This war is twofold. Number one, it is a kinetic war against the terrorist groups themselves. And that's not an abstract concept. You can't tell me that Al-Qaeda or Hezbollah is an abstract concept. You can go to the city of Damascus and you can walk down the streets there and these guys have offices there, for God's sake. Hezbollah is a huge, huge group. That's not a vague concept. The other part of this is it's an ideological war. George Bush didn't want to fight it. Barack Obama has preemptively surrendered it. The ideology is radical Islam. Radical Islam requires jihad. Radical Islam requires war against non-believers. And that's an ideology we need to defeat. The radical Islamism is no different from communism or Nazism or any of the other isms we've had to fight in the world wars and on the Cold War. This is what we have to do. We have to take on the ideological war. Barack Obama has preemptively surrendered the ideological war. What he has done in, for example, our national security documents, the words Islam and terrorism cannot appear in the same paragraph. The word jihad does not appear at all. Terrorism is an abstract. Radical Islam? No, you'll never see that. These people are surrendering. And you can't say the war is over when we are still under attack, when these groups have an ideology which will continue to propel them. You think maybe, well, we can't win, it's going to go on forever? Well, if we can't win, we lose. This is a binary decision. It's ones and zeros, man. It's like a computer. If you don't win, you lose. Right now, we're in the process of losing. We're losing valuable lives and bleeding money in Afghanistan because we decided on nation building instead of killing the enemy. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the path to defeat. And when you have an administration senior official saying the war on terror is over, and at the same time, the same department of our government is listing 50 active terrorist organizations. This is beyond bizarre. This is a surrender. This is what we get from Obama, and this is just one of the very many reasons why every last one of you needs to think long and hard about getting yourself and everybody you know to the polls on November 6th. All right, we got to take another one of those break things. Coming right back to your calls, 800-449-8255. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We're talking about this bizarre, damaging, and dangerous statement, of course, off the record, from a senior State Department official that the war on terror is over and that people are now ready for, quote, legitimate Islamism, end quote. I just cannot understand how anybody in this administration could be that stupid and that ignorant of what's really going on in the world. All right, we're at 800-449-8255, coming right to your calls. Line 5, Dave in Pennsylvania. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes. Yes, the war on terror will never be over.
Really? So we're going to end up losing?
No, we're not going to lose. We were on the right track when we went in there. We went in after the two heads of these organizations. After the towers went down, we went right in there. We should have went in there and said, look, you take us, you did bad to us, we're going to take out your leaders, go in, get the leaders, and then be done with it and come back.
Well,
and
if they
do something else, you'll never win this. They're forever. And that's been going on forever.
Well, that's the problem. Dave, you know, you can win this. And I disagree strongly with you. It can't go on forever. We can't fight forever. We shouldn't have to fight forever. So what we have to do is win. And the way you win is what I was saying in the last segment, not just kinetically. Yeah, you can kill the leaders, more will rise. You can kill a whole bunch of the bad guys. Some of them will, you know, maybe have a lesson for their families, and some people won't go into terrorism at some point. But the ideology that propels them, you have to attack the ideology. George Bush didn't want to. I know for a fact, because I talked to some of the most senior people in that administration, that people were saying, we've got to go after this, Mr. President. We've got to go after the ideology. And he wouldn't do it. And the people in the State Department, the people in the information organizations, I mean, we didn't have Radio Free Europe, but the people like that, they would not even engage on this. And the president wouldn't push him. Now we have Barack Obama, and he has surrendered this part of the war. He will not use those terms. He will not attack the terrorist ideology because he doesn't want to offend anyone who is anywhere near Islam. So now what do we have to do? We have to reverse that. We have to go after the ideology because we can beat them. All right, Dave, thanks for calling. Let's go to line 9, Neil in Arizona. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir.
Question is, if the war on terror is over, why are we still have all of our military personnel out there jeopardizing their lives to protect ours?
Well, that's only part of the point. You're right. I mean, if the war on terror is over, I mean, why would we have anybody in Afghanistan anymore? I mean, why would we have troops in Saudi Arabia trying to protect them? Why would we have troops, you know, in any of the countries that cover the terrorist nations? I mean, why would we want to be fighting? I mean, we have special forces that have been operating off and on in the Philippines for years. Yeah, I mean, with all these guys ought to be brought home, right? The war on terror is over.
Yeah, it's over. Let's bring them home. Let's, you know, if you want to defend the country, bring them home. Let's defend our country.
Well, but the point is, Neil, that's not the way you do it. I mean, we're joking around here, aren't we? At least I am. I mean, the point of the matter is we should be getting out of Afghanistan, but we should also be putting military pressure on terrorists whenever two or more of them shall gather anywhere. They should be looking up and wondering where the next Hellfire missile is coming from, because that's what we do to win. But the other part is you can't win this war just by doing that. And I keep saying it, I'll keep saying it until I die, ladies and gentlemen. We have to do an ideological counterattack. We are under assault ideologically all the time. It's not just politics that we're talking about here. We're talking about an ideology that propels terrorism. We can defeat them just like we defeated communism. We defeated Nazism. But you can't do it if you don't fight. And Barack Obama doesn't even have the courage of Harry Potter, because our national security documents have been skimmed and they've been taken, all the terms, out of there, like jihad and Islamic terrorism. One more before the break, real quick. How about Mike in New York? Thanks for calling the Savage Nation, sir. Got to make it quick.
I'll make it really quick. The whole problem is you cannot have a war on terror. It's too Orwellian. The fact that it's set up so it can't succeed. It's a war. You're battling an enemy. You're battling terror.
Well, Mike, you're not listening. What I've been saying is it's not a war on terror. It's a war on the terrorist ideology.
Well,
and we have missed fighting that part of the war. George Bush wouldn't fight it. Barack Obama has surrendered it. How can you win if you can't even name the enemy? All right, next hour we're going to go into, well, Romney's got it wrapped. Nude is getting out. The Tea Party, I've got a big, big wake-up call for you. Stay with us. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. It's Wednesday. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage. This is the Savage Nation, and we've been spending the last hour talking about, well, this bizarre statement from a senior State Department official that the war on terror is over. Now it's time to break on to something else. We've got a lot more ground to cover, and we've got to move on. Let's talk about yesterday's primary results. We saw a clean sweep. Mitt Romney won all five, New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, where Newt Gingrich thought he was making his last stand, and it seems like it's over. Finally, it's over. Mitt Romney, as of this point, has about 838 of the 1,144 delegates required to be the nominee officially. Now, he's got to wait until the California primary. I think that's May 4th is the next round. You've got Indiana, a couple others. After that, you've got Texas, and then the last one, I think, is June 6th. Which is California. So it will be officially over at that point. But even now, Newt Gingrich is saying, well, you know, I probably got to quit. Well, obviously he's got to quit because he doesn't have the delegates. And Newt is sort of being gracious about it. Now, there's one clip. I think this is from an amateur video that we captured a little bit of the audio, and it's not optimal. But this is Newt Gingrich last night, talking to some supporters in North Carolina. Can I have number 10, please, guys?
I think you have to, at some point, be honest about what's happening in the real world as opposed to what you'd like to have happen.
Governor Romney had a very good day yesterday. Give him some credit. I mean, this guy's worked 6 years, put together a big machine, and has put together a serious campaign. I think, obviously, that I would be a better candidate. But the objective fact is the voters didn't think that.
Well, okay. Now, for Newt, that's pretty gracious. And expecting him to formally quit the campaign next Tuesday, he might very well endorse Romney. He should. He should. If Newt wants, well, you know, Newt's got a great political career behind him. But the point of the matter is, if he wants to be taken seriously, if he wants to really help his party, which he has worked hard for many, many years, he needs to get out, clearly, number one. None of the suspending the campaign. Well, okay, he's going to want to suspend his campaign because that means he'll still try to raise money. He hasn't been able to do that in months and months and months, so it's not going to work. But the basic point is Newt needs to get out and endorse Romney and toss his delegates. I think Gingrich has like 141 delegates right now. Newt needs to toss those delegates to Romney and help him along. Not what Santorum has done. Santorum got out. He's a very bitter guy. He has something like 267 delegates. He could pretty nearly put Romney over the top. Between the two of them, they obviously could. But these guys, you know, they're holding out for something. Maybe they're holding out for a big convention speech. I think that both Santorum and Gingrich should endorse Romney, get behind him very clearly, and just say, all right, you're the guy. We're going to work hard to get you elected. Do you agree, ladies and gentlemen? 800-449-8255. I think it's time. It's time for Newt to get out. If he waits till next Tuesday, fine. If he waits till tomorrow, that's better. But the point of the matter is he needs to get out and endorse Romney very clearly. And the longer Santorum waits, to endorse Romney, the smaller a man he is. If Rick Santorum can't stand up on his hind legs and say, all right, you beat me, I endorse you, for the good of the country, I will work hard to get behind you, and I will help you get elected no matter what I have to do. Ask me, and I'll go do it. I'll lead. I'll go follow. I'll do what you need. Santorum needs to do this, or he's going to be, like Gingrich, off the political stage, and deservedly so. This has been a very bitter primary campaign, ladies and gentlemen. Some guys, like Santorum, like Gingrich, they've said things that are going to be, well, they're going to be campaign commercials. They're going to be campaign commercials for Barack Obama. And we have to understand that. The Mitt Romneys of the world understand that. The people who are now saying, well, you know, I'm getting out of the race or I have to get out of the race, they need to understand the damage they've done and work very hard to undo it. Because if they don't, you're going to end up with Barack Obama again. And we're going to see things like, you know, when you have Newt Gingrich saying, well, Paul Ryan's plan is, you know, right-wing social engineering, and it's no better than left-wing social engineering. Some of the things he said about Bain Capital. I mean, it is just bizarre how nasty this campaign went on. And when Santorum said, you know, in talking about the Etch-a-Sketch comment, well, we might as well stick with what we've got, i.e., let's vote for Obama rather than Romney, rather than have an Etch-a-Sketch candidate. Those things are unforgivable. But they have to be repaired. They have to be repaired. And Santorum and Gingrich need to get off their butts right now and start working for Romney. 800-449-8255. I think they have an obligation to do that. I think they have an obligation to work for Romney and repair the damage that they've done. Repair the damage that you've done, Newt. You know, you really have a first-class mind. It's completely undisciplined, but you need to get off your butt and really work very hard. Now, you may be prepared to do that. And if you are, my hat's off to you. But if you're not, I think America will be done with you. I think really seriously. And Senator Santorum, you have a lot more to repair. You have a lot more damage that you've got to repair. You need to get off your duff right now, today, and say you endorse Romney. The fact that you got out of this campaign more than a week ago, actually, it's probably 2 weeks ago by now. I don't know. It doesn't even matter because when you got out, you weren't in it anyway. But the point of the matter is you have an obligation to this country, not even to the Republican Party, to this country, to get everything done that needs to be done to repair the damage you did to Mitt Romney and to get this guy elected, because we can't stand another 4 years of Barack Obama. All right, 800-449-8255. Jed Babin in for Michael Savage. Let's go to the phones. How about, all right, line three, Tony in Kentucky. You think Romney's not the right guy, so what do you want to do? You want to just fold your cards?
No, I'm not folding my cards. I agree. We got to get rid of Obama. But right now, you know.
Well, your only choice then is Romney. We got to quit whining about the fact that Romney is not the perfect candidate. Yeah, okay, I'll stipulate that. So what? I mean, the perfect candidate didn't run.
But he's mediocre right now. And
well,
I mean, do we really want
how do we help him? Look, I mean, you don't have a choice. Tell me what the choice is. You got a choice. It's a binary choice, just like winning and losing a war, winning and losing an election. It's Romney versus Obama. What are you going to do? Are you going to vote for Romney, Tony?
If I'm voting in this election, yes, I'm voting for Romney.
Well, if you're not voting, shame on you.
Well,
why would you stay
I'm
home?
Waiting for an independent to come in that's going to be strong. To be honest,
There's not going to be an independent that's going to be strong. You're wishing for a third party candidate. There hasn't been a third party successful candidate, I think, since Teddy Roosevelt ran as a bull mooser. I guess he lost, didn't he? I mean, the fact of the matter is you can dream about something else. You can think ahead to 2016, that's fine. But if you don't vote, and if you vote, you don't vote for Mitt Romney, you are responsible for the outcome. You want to be responsible for Barack Obama's reelection? If you don't, you'd better vote for Romney. All right, thanks for the call. Let's go to line four. Let's go to line two. Larry in New York. Welcome
Hello,
to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call.
Yes, sir.
I rise in disagreement with your point that we have to get behind Romney because, sir, I can't agree that it's Romney's intellect or his ideas or his presence that has put him on top. It's his money. And the fact that he ran a very, very bitter campaign against two outstanding contenders, and we have the convention process that we're going to go through.
Well,
and
wait a minute, Larry, why do you think that we're going to have anything other than Romney? I mean, there is the convention. He's going to have 1,144 delegates or thereabouts when he walks in there. The convention process is not going to change anything. I mean, we can all stop whining. Nobody is saying that Mitt Romney is the perfect candidate. But I got to tell you, Larry, I mean, do you think we're going to beat Barack Obama with anybody else? You're not going to have Newt Gingrich get in the nomination. You're not going to have Rick Santorum. You're not going to have somebody come out from the hinterlands. You're not going to have Ron Paul, thank God. I mean, what's your answer? I mean, what do you say, Larry?
Well, the answer is more than the limited topics that you just brought up. Process of the convention is the introduction of the platform, the planks in the platform.
Larry, you're not answering my question. What's the alternative to Romney?
And
you're not going to have the platform. I know how the convention works. Everybody in who's listening, Michael Savage has one of the smartest audiences in the whole radio business. They understand the convention business. What do you say is the alternative to Romney? You're not going to have a different nominee. What are you going to do? I'm listening, but I'm not hearing anything. I'm not hearing what your answer is to my question. I'm the host here. You're supposed to be answering my questions.
Oh, yes, sir. For those of us on the right, Romney brings nothing to the table. Romney has brought to the table an enormous sum of money.
Larry, thanks. Thank you. But thank you for the call. But there's nothing that you're saying that is going to change anything. The fact of the matter is Mitt Romney is our nominee. He's not a bad guy. He is a good guy. He can be a terrific candidate. And it's high time we stop whining about the fact that Ronald Reagan, God love him and God rest him, isn't here to run. Let's stop whining and get behind Romney, or we're going to be stuck with four more years of Barack Obama, and we can't survive that. All right, before we go into the break, let me just give you a little bit of information here about one of our great friends, IncomeAtHome.com. We started with a work-from-home revolution. Our listeners are so tired of this economy, job insecurities, and living paycheck to paycheck that they're taking action. About 1,000 people a month are discovering the genius of starting their own home business through IncomeAtHome.com, like John Ball. Talk about bad luck. He had lost his job and was in foreclosure when he heard about IncomeAtHome.com, so he thought, why not? Today, John runs his own home business, earns over $5,000 a month, and just won a new Porsche in his business contest. Look, not everybody gets a Porsche, and not everybody earns thousands a month. But doesn't earning money from home sound smart? IncomeAtHome.com helps our listeners get up and running in days. No pressure. No matter your age, education, or experience, you can literally earn money on your computer from your kitchen table. And check out their $1,000 giveaway at IncomeAtHome.com. IncomeAtHome.com, results not average. Visit the website to see the results you can expect. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Last night, I think you heard a pretty good speech from our friend Mitt Romney. Let's go to just a couple of cuts from that. Clip 8, please, guys.
This America is fundamentally fair. We will stop the unfairness of urban children being denied access to the good schools of their choice. We will stop the unfairness of politicians giving taxpayer money to their friends' businesses.
That's pretty darn good. The guy's getting better. This is going to be our nominee for this year. Let's get used to it. Let's stand behind him. And, you know, I'm really tired of people who are saying, well, you know, this has got the right guy, and we need somebody. No, we're not going to have somebody else. Ronald Reagan didn't run. Mitch Daniels didn't run. Mike Pence didn't run. You know, there's a whole host of people who might have been better. We don't really know. The point of the matter is, right now, Newt Gingrich is out of it. Rick Santorum is out of it. Ron Paul has always been on another planet. The point of the matter is, here, Newt Gingrich is done. And Rick Santorum is done, as I just said. But Mitt Romney is the nominee. So let's quit griping about it and quit saying, well, we should have had somebody better. Let's get this job done. We can't have four more years of Barack Obama. 800-449-8255. Let's go right to your calls. Line 2, Matt in Las Vegas. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. You're on the air.
I think your last two callers were way off. Actually, Mitt Romney, to me, is overqualified to be president. I think he could be turned out to be one of the greatest presidents we've ever had. Ever.
Well,
I mean,
why do you say that?
Here we have a guy that's very well educated, has lived in the real world, has created jobs for 25 years in the private sector, has been the governor of one of the most important, one of the biggest states in the country, and he's got no scandals behind him. There's nothing there. The only scandal that people could talk about him is he's successful. That's the only thing that
he's successful.
Have to say about the guy.
Exactly. But that's a big scandal. Matt, don't you understand? In the light, in the eyes of Obama, in the eyes of people like Joe Biden, that's a scandal. This guy's a successful businessman. He made money. He helped other people make money. There's got to be something wrong with this guy. But there's another aspect to him, Matt, and I think a lot of people have to realize this. And I'm going to get the story a little bit skewed, I know, because I didn't study up on it. It seems to me that I recall about 10 years ago, Romney was still with Bain Capital, and one of his partners or one of his employees had a teenage daughter who disappeared in New York. You probably remember this. And what he basically said was, okay, I'm shutting down the shop. Everybody's going to New York. We're going to hire detectives. We're going to walk the streets ourselves. We're going to find this kid.
Wow.
That's a man of character, and
that's wild.
Did it.
And not only that, when President Obama the other day took a jab at him and said, I wasn't born with a silver spoon in my mouth. That's total BS, because all the money that he inherited, Mitt Romney, he gave away to charity. So Mitt Romney needs to come out and say things like that.
Matt,
he can't
you're
be
reading my mind. Matt, you're reading my mind. This is painful. The guy needs to react quickly. He needs to get out there and really start swinging. Last night he started. It was a pretty darn good speech. Well, look, that clip we just played about fairness, I think he used the term fairness 6 or 7 times. He's turning it around on Obama. Obama keeps talking about, well, we're going to be fair. Fairness to Obama means spending more money. Fairness to Obama means taking away from the people who earn and giving it to the people who don't. fairness to Obama means crony capitalism, giving it to things like Solyndra and people who make electric sports cars and taking it away from the real energy industry. Matt, you're dead bang on. How come you're in Vegas?
I used to work as a broker on Wall Street, actually, for about 20 years. I got caught in 9/11 in the Trade Center, so I moved out west. I got scared of living in the city. But let me bring this up as far as the bulldog that you brought up, and you read my mind, sir, is what he needs on his ticket is a Richard Nixon. But Eisenhower has
I wish, Matt, sorry, we got to take a hard break. I only wish there were such a person. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. We'll be right back.
Savage.
After all the celebration and the parades, what do we have to show for 3.5 years of President Obama? Is it easier to make ends meet? Is it easier to sell your home or buy a new one? Have you saved what you needed for retirement? Are you making more at your job? Do you have a better chance to get a better job? Are you paying less at the pump? You know, if the answer were yes to those questions, then President Obama would be running for re-election based on his record.
That was Mitt Romney last night after the primary results came in, speaking in New Hampshire, where the campaign kicked off. That guy is getting better. And now we're going to have Gingrich stepping out of the way, hopefully, well, graciously, if he will endorse Romney. Santorum needs to step up to the plate and endorse Romney. Put him over the top, get him to the 1144 he needs, and let's get this business going against Obama. 800-449-8255, Jed Babin for Michael Savage. Going right back to your calls. How about line one, Jerry in Wisconsin. Thanks for calling. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yes, I'd just like to say that Mr. Romney could really help himself, but he has to pick the right vice presidential candidate.
Well, who do you have in mind?
I got Colonel Alan West out of Florida.
Yeah, Alan's a good guy. I know him.
Yeah, well, I think that's what this country needs. He'd probably get the military straightened back to where it needs to be. You know, he could bring some ethics back into this situation.
Let me suggest to you, Jerry, there's two things that you know, we need to address when we're talking about vice presidents. Number one, a vice president can't win the election for you. A vice presidential running mate maybe will help on the margins, but the days of even a vice presidential candidate being relied on to carry his own state, those days are over. You know, Alan West has some really good points about him. I like him a lot. I think I was the first person to write about him when he was still on active duty, and there was an incident in Iraq, and he really, I think he's an American hero. But let me suggest to you, especially you might take note from Wisconsin, because there's a congressman from your state who I think would be the best pick. Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee. Look, the Ryan budget plan, Obama has made it very clear. Debbie Wasserman Schultz has made it very clear. You know, all of the people in the Democratic Party have made it very clear the Ryan plan is going to be a big issue. They're going to make it like, you know, Ryan wants to, and the Republicans want to starve old people and kill children and eat puppies. You know, this is what they're going to say about the Ryan plan. Who better to have on the ticket to defend the Ryan plan than Ryan? He's a very smart guy, very, very smart guy, and he's telegenic. He can do very, very well out on the stump. I don't know. I think Paul Ryan would be a really good choice, but your point is almost well taken. Romney can help himself with a good vice presidential selection. He can also hurt himself badly with the wrong one. Hey, great call, Jerry. Thanks for it. Let's go to line two, George in North Carolina. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for calling.
Thank you, Jed, for taking my call. I just want to make the point that Romney is like Reagan, and that's what nobody's saying. The right-wingers are taking it way overboard and saying he's not conservative enough and he's not like Reagan. Well, I got news for you. He is Reagan, and he can win this,
thing.
And I'm with you on your vice presidential pick as well. I think Paul Ryan would be a great one.
Well, thank you. You know, I like Romney. I really do. But is he really another Reagan? I mean, maybe. I mean, and Lord only knows, something could happen if he's elected, and he may be a great, great president. But I think you're holding him to a really pretty high standard there. What's the basis?
I just believe that his politics are right in line. He's got the power. He's got the political will. He's got the machine behind him, and I think he can do it.
Well, I hope so. I hope so. You know, I really think that we have a good guy in Mitt Romney. I think he's getting to be a better candidate, and I think each and every one of us has an obligation to push him across the finish line. Hey, George, thanks for the call. Good call. Let's go to line 8, Jeff in Pittsburgh. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you very much for taking my call. You're doing a great job for Dr. Savage.
Thank you.
But listen, I'm just glad to hear in the last couple of calls that we have some Romney supporters. I've been a supporter since the 2008 campaign. I've read on him. I've done my research. I listened to Dr. Savage. I read his books. He's
good.
Straight
Don't
up.
Forget to get the new one.
Family man, you know?
Well, yeah, I think that's right. I think there's a lot to say for someone who is scandal-free, who really has a very solid family background. You know, you look at, again, I keep picking on Newt Gingrich because he deserves it. I mean, the guy's got through 3 marriages. I mean, his personal life is a train wreck. Mitt Romney doesn't have that problem. You know, he has a very solid family. He's a good, you know, whether you agree with whatever his religion provides or not, he is a very religious guy. He's a very generous guy. He gives millions to charity. You know, this is a guy who I think has a very solid, solid character. And, you know, it's our own fault, ladies and gentlemen, it's our own bloody fault if we don't elect this guy. If we don't turn out, if we don't get everybody else we know to turn out. I mean, Jeff, what are you going to do for Election Day? Are you going to do what I said and rent a van, drive everybody you know who's going to vote for Romney to the polls personally?
Yes, I would love to do that. I'm or get my use my family's car. They have a big van. Take them all around.
Good enough.
I carry around Dr. Savage's book, Trickle Down Tyranny.
Good man.
I walk around the city and I show people. I said, "This is what we need."
Good man.
Thank you very much.
Hey, Jeff, thank you very much for the call. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we got to do. Everybody listening, you've got a personal obligation. Participate. Get people to the polls. This is what we're going to be talking about from now until midnight, or whenever the polls close in your place on Election Day. All right. 800-449-8255. We're talking about Romney. We're talking about the fact I believe Santorum and Gingrich have an obligation to work to repair the damage that they did in the course of this campaign, and it's time to start right now. Do you think they have that obligation? I think each one of them does. Let's go to your back to the phones, 800-449-8255. Line 3, Brett in California. Welcome aboard, sir.
Yeah, I think that Mitt Romney should choose Condoleezza Rice to be his running mate.
Oh, my God, why?
Because she's a black woman, and so you're going to expose that side of things in the campaign, and how is Obama going to fight that? And she's a woman, and she's incredibly talented, on foreign affairs, and I think she brings a lot to the table. And I've been heavily involved in the Romney fundraising out here in California. And
good for you.
I just believe that would be a great choice.
Well, I beg to differ. I think Condi Rice is someone who is way too liberal. I think she has proven herself to be and I'm trying to be gentle and kind here, an inadequate and not very good administrator. If you read some of the books that came out of the Bush administration, read Don Rumsfeld's memoir, if you read Dick Cheney's memoir. I mean, I've talked to many people who knew her, and I just don't think that's the kind of person we want. She's an academic. I mean, you want to bring her back into the White House as national security advisor or something like that. Even that probably wouldn't be a good deal. But the point of the matter is, Dr. Rice is a very brilliant person, but I don't think that just being black or just being a woman or, in fact, just being both means that you should be selected. And a lot of people out there I know are going to yell at me, and you can call in and yell all you want. But I think although John McCain was an utter disaster unto himself, I think he hurt himself by choosing Sarah Palin. She was not prepared. She was not very bright. And she was not someone who was ready for the national stage. So choosing someone just because of they are of a particular gender or a particular race, that's stupid. Let's get somebody who's really good, really sharp. I would love to see. I would pay money, in fact, to buy a ticket to go see a debate between Paul Ryan and Joey Biden. Oh, my Lord. 800-449-8255. Let's go to line three. Brett. Oh, we missed Brett. How about line five, Ed in Pennsylvania? Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir.
Yes, thank you. I'm calling about third parties and the benefits to possibly staying away from the Republican Party. I've been a Republican for most of my life, which isn't too long. I'm only 33, but I'm tired of the two-party system and how they basically operate the same.
All right, so what are you going to do? You've got two choices in November. You're going to stay home and pout, or are you going to get out there and vote Mr. Romney in and Mr. Obama out?
The chances of me voting for Romney is pretty slim. I see him.
So what are you going to do? Are you going to vote for Obama? You're going to vote for Obama then?
No, I am.
Well, that's the same thing.
For Buddy Romer.
Well, yeah, wasting your vote. I mean, you might as well vote for Yogi the Bear. I mean, this is ridiculous. Ed, you sound like you've got at least a half a brain. You can't seriously believe that voting for anybody other than Mitt Romney is going to do anything except get Barack Obama back in the White House. You can protest. You can make a protest vote, but what the heck? I mean, why waste your vote? You might as well just stay home, have a latte, relax, be lazy. You know, if you don't care enough to vote Obama out, why bother to go to the polls? Why? Nobody's going to care. Nobody's going to know. I mean, if you go down to your local bar and tell the guys at the bar, well, I voted for Buddy Romer in a protest against the two-party system. Nobody cares, Ed. Make yourself known. Make yourself felt. Do something. Have the guts. Have the guts. If you don't like Mitt Romney, you go vote for Obama. Go do it. And then you have responsibility for the results. What you're doing is you're evading responsibility. You're refusing to make a choice. Is that the American way, Ed?
That's ridiculous. Here's
why is it ridiculous? You're saying it's ridiculous, but you're not supporting it. Why is it ridiculous? You think a protest vote is going to have any effect on anything or anybody?
Please talk. Can I please talk?
I'm waiting.
Here's the problem. We have two parties.
No, you're not answering my question, Ed. I'm asking the question. Do you think your protest vote will have any effect on anything? Why would anybody care?
As long as we continue to vote for the lesser of two evils, we will always have evil in power.
Ed, you're ridiculous. I hope you stay home on Election Day. Please, please, stay home. Go out to a local Starbucks. Get yourself a nice cream decaf latte and a big donut and sit there and fall asleep in front of the TV. Don't bother to vote. People like you don't have enough sense to understand what's going on in this country is a terminal disease. If we do not get rid of Barack Obama at the polling places on November the 6th, we may not survive as a country 4 years later. I'm sorry, Ed, you're out of here. All right. Oh, my goodness. We're coming up to a break, aren't we? Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Pardon me while I choke and grab a little swig of water here. We're going to continue with this, ladies and gentlemen. I really think, people like Ed really just need to stay home. You know, if you're not going to vote for Mitt Romney, you are going to be responsible for reelecting Barack Obama. And if you don't believe that, just wait until the morning of November 7th when you sat home and you've not voted, or you voted for Obama, or you voted for Buddy Romer, or you voted for Jimmy Durante or Jerry Lewis or anybody else in the graveyard you might have revered. The point of the matter is here, if you don't vote for Mitt Romney, your vote is counted as a vote for Barack Obama. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. And during the break, go on Amazon, buy a copy of Trickle Down Tyranny. We'll be right back.
Savage.
Back in 28, when it was built, they didn't realize that they effectively created a dam through half of the alligators. through half of the Everglades, cutting off the water supply that these wetlands depend upon.
Okay, we just had to have our Joey Biden moment. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. Mitt Romney, it's his time. It's his nomination. Let's quit whining about it. And please, please, ladies and gentlemen, don't be like Ed. Don't sit home. I'm going to make a protest vote. I'm going to vote for Bozo the Clown. No, protest votes are, in effect, votes for Barack Obama. Because if you don't vote for Mitt Romney, it's a binary choice. You're going to be counted as a no vote, and you're going to be counted in a vote for Obama. Jed Babin, let's go right to the phones. Line 10, Jim in one of my favorite places in this country, New Orleans. Welcome to the show.
How you doing, my friend?
Doing good.
Why, you know, as many negatives as the President Obama has, when you listen to these idiots voting for third-party candidates. Remember Ross Perot?
Oh, I remember Mr. Big Ears himself and his charts and his little squeaky voice and his PowerPoint. Yes, I remember Ross Perot.
Yes, and Larry King and him is the reason that Bill Clinton won the election, okay?
Yes, absolutely.
But here's the thing. Mitt Romney has to become a pit bull. He's got to point out all of those negatives in Obama. And we all have to circle the wagon, the conservatives, the liberals, the moderates, the Tea Party people, because if we don't, that's why all the polls show that Obama's 9-10 points ahead of Romney because of morons who think like they can vote for Buddy Roma, who used to be the governor of this state.
Yeah, I think 2 points, Jim, and I think you're right and you're wrong in one way. I mean, we need to have Romney get more aggressive. His staff needs to get him out, and when somebody in the Obama administration says the war on terror is over, like we talked about last hour, I mean, that just has to be something they jump on. But the real issue here is, you know, we can't be circling the wagons. We need to be on the other side. Let the other side circle the wagons and let them worry about the next wave of Tea Partiers and conservatives that are coming over the hill hooping and hollering and voting. That's what we need. We need to be very aggressive in this election because these guys will stop at nothing, whether it's voter fraud. I mean, why do you think they're so up in arms against voter ID? There's going to be massive voter fraud if we don't have voter ID. For heaven's sake, I have to show an ID to get into the building I'm broadcasting from. The point here is, actually, I had to show it twice, once to get into the garage and once to get up to the floor I'm on. The point of the matter is here, we need voter ID and we need Romney to be aggressive, and he needs to get after every little bit of what Obama says and Obama does, and he needs, pardon me, a good VP who can also go out there and defend the Ryan budget and defend the federal deficit cutting. Cut the deficit. Cut the size of government. The American people are sick and tired of all of the stuff that's been going on. Jim, I think you're on the right track. But don't you agree? Let the other side circle the wagons. We need to be attacking in wave after wave after wave. And the next hour, I'm going to be talking about how the Tea Party needs to wake up to what's going on in Washington. Let's go on from here. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim, great call. Thanks for it. You know, I need to be down in New Orleans again soon, and I really look forward to going down there because it's a beautiful city and beautiful restaurants. But getting back to the campaign here, we need to have Newt Gingrich and Rick Santorum do what they need to do. Do their duty and start repairing the damage they did to Romney during the campaign. We're going to need them to do their duty, just like each and every one of us will need to do their duty. Get out there. Get people to vote. Get a van on Election Day, for God's sake. Go to the local retirement home and see if anybody wants to vote for Romney. Hop aboard. Drive you to the polls. And, you know, maybe buy him a donut on the way. It's not illegal. It's courtesy. Let's get this done, ladies and gentlemen. We need to do it for the sake of our country, the future of our country. Because if we have another 4 years of Barack Obama, I'm not sure there'll be another 4 years. Number three, line three, Dave in Texas. Welcome to the Michael Savage Show, sir. You're aboard.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to this, people, and they're about to drive me crazy. When is America going to wake up and realize that if they sit around and do nothing, that we're only going to get worse? If you choose not to decide, you still have made a choice.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, Dave, this is just more common sense from Texas, ladies and gentlemen. I don't know why we get so much common sense from Texas, but you're right. You're either part of the solution or you're part of the problem. I choose to be part of the solution. The problem is Barack Obama. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Got to take a break. We'll be right back to you.
Savage.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Don't forget to go on Amazon and get your copy of Trickle Down Tyranny today. All right, we've spent the last couple of hours talking about some very important things, but we can't go any farther without getting to the wake-up call for the Tea Party that I promised you. Now, everybody remembers the big battle last summer over the debt ceiling. It was the second time that we'd fought over the debt ceiling. The Republicans were scared to death that they would be really held responsible for shutting down the government. So they went into this big deal, okay? $2.1 trillion increase in the debt ceiling. So maybe it would go all the way through this election. There was the bill called the Budget Control Act, which raised the debt ceiling by that amount. It also did a lot of other things. It talked about $2.1 trillion in spending cuts, and it limited what Congress could do in other bills to have a pay-go rule established. They had pay-as-you-go. If you had another bill that had any spending in it, you had to have it what they call revenue neutral. So, of course, you could raise taxes all the time if you're a Democrat, but if you're a Republican, and thank heaven the Republicans control the House, you had to cut spending somewhere else. Well, this Budget Control Act has been responsible for the pending slash of the defense budget for another $600 billion over the next 10 years. And, of course, it didn't touch the entitlements. So that's where the money is. So that's where things really are teetering. America teetering on the brink of bankruptcy. Right now, our debt is over $16 trillion. $16 trillion. And that $16 trillion is equal to about 100% of our gross domestic product. What that means is everything that is earned, produced, grown, sown, mown, anything you want to talk about, anything in the entire country comes together in our gross domestic product. Okay, we now owe the Chinese and others, we owe ourselves and the debt, the Social Security accounts, all the rest of these things that we've been borrowing from. $16 trillion. Now, the pay-go rule was established so that it would be very easy to stop any bill that violated it and violated the Budget Control Act. Well, one of the things you Tea Partiers need to understand, as hard as you have fought, as hard as we have fought to keep the federal deficit down, well, the Democrats have broken the deal. Now, the guy who's been trying to ride herd on this is Senator Jeff Sessions, Republican of Alabama, great conservative, tough guy. He's been working very, very hard. Now, there was a bill yesterday, and you Tea Partiers need to understand this. So I'm going to go through it in a little bit of detail. Forgive me, ladies and gentlemen, if I'm going down into the weeds, but you need to understand this to understand why the deal has been broken. The deal has been broken on the debt ceiling, and the Democrats broke it with the help of a couple of Republicans. Now, what they did, this Postal Service bill
Anytime you hear about a postal service bill, you can figure, well, okay, there's going another couple of billion dollars. What happened was they caused in this postal service bill, it requires the Treasury to borrow another $34 billion to cover the costs, and the taxpayers, you and me, were all on the hook for every penny of that amount. Now, in the Budget Control Act, the debt ceiling deal, they had a mechanism what's called a point of order. A point of order allowed any senator or any congressman, I believe, to stand up and say, I raise a point of order against the bill, and it would die because it violated the PAYGO rule. Now, yesterday, Senator Sessions got up and raised a point of order against the Postal Service bill, as he was entitled to do, and they had a vote on it, okay? Just because you have a point of order, of course, in the Senate, there's always a way around something, but you now have a point of order raised. They had a vote. It was a 60-vote requirement. You had to have 60 votes to overcome Senator Jeff Sessions' point of order. Well, of course, they got 62. I say of course because the usual suspects, the liberals, the rhinos, they Republican rhinos in the Senate, with a couple of exceptions that really kind of shock me. Well, let's see. We have Thad Cochran of Mississippi, who's not really a rhino, but he's a big porkster. Oh, yes, Susan Collins and Olympia Snow, the ladies of Maine, did us in again. Lisa Murkowski, another rhino from Alaska, she voted for it. And both Kansas senators, which is really kind of surprising to me. I don't know Senator Moran. I know Senator Pat Roberts, who is a great guy, a good conservative. I don't get why he voted on this. But the basic point was they helped override this point of order from Senator Jeff Sessions. What does that mean? Okay, what does that mean? The bill probably won't pass the House anyway. But the point really here is the Democrats have broken the deal. And what you Tea Partiers need to understand, we all need to understand, and we need to get active on, is the fact that these guys have broken the deal. They're spending as much as they can, as fast as they can. This bill for the Postal Service, of course, was going to go and help the Postal Service Union, which, of course, the Obama administration is always willing to bail out a friendly union, the UAW. That's why we had the car bailout. The basic point here is this deal has been broken. And what does it mean? It means that we may have, before the end of this year, and maybe it'll be timed so it'll be after the election, they'll run out of money before the election. This government is spending as fast as they can get money to write checks on. And what they're doing right now is they're building up to another debt ceiling battle. Now, what happens, ladies and gentlemen, if this money runs out before the November election? We're going to have another big fight. Are the Republicans going to have the guts to say, we're not going to allow this? We're just going to shut down the government. I don't think they will have that amount of guts. What will happen is if we don't get out there, if you and me and the rest of the Tea Party people, if we don't get out there and support the idea that this deal was a deal, no more debt ceiling increases, no more spending, you know, we're going to go into a lame duck session. And if Obama is reelected, what they'll do is they'll hike the debt ceiling again. So this is a wake-up call. All you Tea Partiers out there, 800-449-8255, do you think this is serious enough for you to get involved? Now, a lot of you think, I'm sure, and some with good reason, you've worked very, very hard. You've put all your political energy into this, and it didn't work the last time. Well, the debt ceiling got hiked anyway. Yeah, it did. But the bleeding at least was slowed, not stopped, a little bit. Just a little bit. Now what you see, the floodgates are beginning to open again. The people in the Senate are going to do everything they can. The Democrats in the Senate are going to do everything they can and just work very, very hard to spend. And Obama's going to try to buy the election. He's going to spend like he's never been spending before. You think the GSA wasted $823,000 on a conference? You haven't seen waste yet. We're going to see more crony capitalism. We're going to see what the Energy Department doing, whatever it wants to do, giving money to more cylinders. There's going to be all sorts of corruption going on and on and on. And the normal course of the Obama administration, just spending and spending and spending and spending. And on top of that, what's coming? We've talked about it before. We've talked about it on this show. We talked about the fact that there's another $600 billion in cuts coming to the defense budget, and nobody knows what we're cutting, fat or muscle. We know they're going to be increasing all sorts of other spending. They're doing everything they can to spend us, well, frankly, out of business. Frankly, totally out of business. The Obama administration does not want this country to revive economically because they only want an economy that functions on their terms. Their terms mean all sorts of new regulation. And we're going to be talking about that in the next segment. We're going to be talking about regulations like this new thing coming out of, heaven help us, the Labor Department that's banning or proposes to ban kids working on their family farms. So all you Tea Partiers out there, do you believe what you're hearing right now is a significant action? I do. I think what's happening in the Senate, the violation of the terms of the debt ceiling bill last year, I think the debt ceiling bill raised a big point. Why don't you even hear about this from the media? Nobody else talks about this stuff. It's a little hard. It requires a little bit of analysis. It requires a little bit of budgetary thinking. And it requires a little bit of knowledge of what goes on in the rules of the Senate. But what I'm telling you right now, the Democrats have broken the deal. So I'll tell you what, it seems like Mitt Romney ought to seize on this too. He ought to seize on it because this is the right thing to do. Let's break the deal. The Democrats already did it. The Democrats have broken the budget deal, the debt ceiling deal. It seems like the Republicans now ought to just go on and really hit hard and start passing bills, never get it through the Senate. Obama will never sign it, but passing bills. Let's close down a couple of government departments. Who needs the Department of Energy? Who needs the Department of Education? We don't. The Department of Energy doesn't produce energy. The Department of Education doesn't educate. I mean, we could save a few $100 billion just doing that. Ladies and gentlemen, this is a time for political action. The Democrats have broken the deal. The Tea Partiers out there, ladies and gentlemen, you need to get active. You need to start talking to people. You need to start calling up your senators and congressmen and saying, what the heck, over? I mean, if these guys are going to break the deal, why don't we break it real well and let's take a machete to the federal budget? Oh, yeah, I guess the Senate never passes budgets. Why don't we take a machete to the federal appropriations bills? That's what originates in the House. Cut federal spending now. Cut federal spending. Cut out agencies. Cut massively. These guys want to play this way. They've broken the deal. It seems to me now it's time to say, okay, fine. You want to play that way? We can play that way too. And you know what? We're going to be better than you are at it. We're going to really slash the federal budget and leave it to the Senate. If the Senate doesn't want to pass those bills, fine. Let's go into November. Let's go into November saying we have cut, I don't know, a trillion or more off the federal budget in the next, not 20 years, not in 30 years. How about the next 5 years? How about the next 3 years? We can do this. You can do this. Wake up, Tea Partiers. Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. We'll be right back. Savage. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. All right, we went through the problem. The Democrats have broken the deal on the debt ceiling hike. They're going around it. They're trying to violate it. They're going to spend as much as they can, and the money may very well run out right after Election Day. Now, wouldn't that be a coincidence? Wouldn't that be a coincidence? Yeah, we just go through the election, and Obama skates by somehow. And, you know, people stay home and don't vote for Romney or vote for third-party candidates. Yeah, and all of a sudden the money runs out. And, gee, what do you think will happen in the lame duck session? Well, the Republicans in the House probably won't go along with it, except for the fact they do all the time. They're so scared of being accused of shutting down the government, they'll go along with another debt ceiling hike. So the question to you, ladies and gentlemen, the question for this segment is, well, are the Tea Partiers going to get active? Are they going to smell the coffee and get back in the game? God love you. I've been there. I've been to rallies. I've supported the Tea Party. I love the Tea Party. But the job's not over because the Democrats will spend and spend and spend and spend. They never give up. You can't either. So are the Tea Partiers going to get back in the game or not? That's my question to you, 800-449-8255. In the meantime, all right, one last call. One last call on this. Gingrich and Santorum, my view, they have an obligation to get behind Romney, and they need to do it right bloody now. All right, let's go line one, Steve in Florida. You're on the Savage Nation, sir. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, Jed, I agree with you that I voted for Gingrich in our state's primary, and I agree with you that Gingrich should and will, I believe, get behind Romney, support Romney. I guess where I might differ with you a little bit is that I think criticism of Romney, Etch-a-Sketch, or whatever you want to call it, is a healthy thing. That's what we didn't have during the George W. Bush years. I voted for Bush, but the sort of like a circle the wagons mentality, and then we ended up with Barack Obama, which is our worst nightmare. I think criticism is healthy, and I think it's good as long as it's fair. I agree with you that the Bain capital might have been wrong, but Romney's got some real problems on foreign policy. I'm sure you know. Maybe you heard the December 10th Iowa debate where Romney took Gingrich to task over his comment that the Palestinians are terrorists or an invented people. Santorum ganged in with Romney. I was very disappointed with Romney on that. And
I agree with you in a part, but you know the point is, whoops, sorry. The basic point is that you have a situation where the criticism went over the top. You know, I think what they said in the debates, I mean, most of that was just fine. And agreeing or disagreeing with somebody on a policy basis, I have no problem with that. But some of the stuff that Gingrich said about Bain, I mean, it was just over the top. And it was ridiculous. And it was hurtful to the party and to the chances of anybody beating Obama. And when you look at Santorum, I mean, some of the things that he said, I mean, I keep going back to that one comment he made very late in the campaign. I mean, the point is he was saying, well, we might as well stay with what we have rather than vote for an Etch-a-Sketch candidate. That's over the top. I mean, he's saying vote for Obama instead of Romney. That is the kind of thing that shows bad judgment. In the case of Santorum, I think bad character. And, you know, I think the difference here is, again, just to have a question of policy and a fair and open debate. And I'm all for that. I mean, I go back to that great line in that old movie, 1776, where the crusty old guy says, well, I don't think there's anything that shouldn't be talked about. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. Jed Babin sitting in for Dr. Michael Savage, 800-449-8255. All right, break. I promised you we had to get to a lot of things today. We've got at least one or two more that I want to cover. Right now, I'm looking at a story that was in the Daily Caller today, dailycaller.com. It's about a new rule that the Department of Labor is about to engage and impose on America. Now, you've got to remember, the Department of Labor and all the rest of the federal bureaucracy and all the state and local bureaucracies, the people who work there are a primary constituency of Barack Obama. Now, these people, a lot of them belong to the federal government unions and all the rest of that, they don't have enough to do. So what they're looking at are things they can regulate and things they can engage in. This is another case, ladies and gentlemen, of government in your face and on your back. Now, there's a lot of great people out there living on America's farms. A lot of people work on family farms, and a lot of young people grow up working on those farms part-time when they're not in school. They drive tractors, they mow, they harvest, they plant. They learn responsibility, and they learn safety in organizations like, well, 4-H, Future Farmers of America. I mean, these people learn useful skills when they're kids. Now we have the Department of Labor. And the Department of Labor, headed by Ms. Hilder Solis, who I'm sure is some, you know, separated at birth from Janet Incompetano, over at Department of Homeland and Security. But Ms. Solis is now putting out a rule that would apply child labor laws to children working on family farms, prohibiting them, and here I'm reading a little bit from Patrick Richardson's story from the Daily Caller, prohibiting them from performing a list of jobs on their own family's land, not working for somebody else. This is, hey, if dad tells you to take the tractor out and till it up that one field, if you're 16 years old, you can do that. If you're 14 years old, you can do that. Well, if you're 12 years old, you probably can do it too, and you've learned the safety of the tractor and the equipment's already on it. You can just drive back and forth. I did it when I was in that age. I was driving mowers. I wasn't driving tillers and harvesters, but my grandmother had a nice little farm in upstate New York. I did this stuff. I learned how to handle some machinery. Now this Department of Labor rule is saying, we're not going to let you do that anymore. You can't do that even on your family farm. It's not a question of going to the next farm and saying, hey, you know, Mr. Smith, I can work for, you know, $5 an hour and I'd like a part-time job during the summer. No, this is if your mother asks you to go and connect a milking machine to the cow and you're underage, according to the Department of Labor, you're going to be prohibited from doing this. Your parents could be fined, maybe even jailed. Even this is great. Again, going back to Patrick Richardson's story here, and I quote, the new regulations, first proposed August 31 by Labor Secretary Hilda Solis, would also revoke the government's approval of safety training and certification taught by independent groups like 4-H and FFA, replacing them instead with a 90-hour federal government training course, end quote. Oh, that's a great idea. If you're living in the middle of, oh, I don't know, Montana or Idaho or Iowa, you need to have a 90-hour training course from the government before they're going to let you work on your parents' farm? Ladies and gentlemen, this is just another case of government out of control. These bureaucrats, I mean, these people in the Labor Department, oh, I'm sure they think they're doing very well for America's children because, as with everything else the Democrats do, it's all about the children. It's all about providing a better future for our children. Isn't it, Mr. Obama? Well, of course not. The people who are saying the government is going to train kids on farm safety by making them drag across the state for a 90-hour course, they're going to do a better job than the kids' own parents. The better job, the government's a better parent, of course. How could I have forgotten? This is where we as conservatives depart. This is where we depart from the government does everything. Anything better? We have a couple of clips, don't we? I think we have Mr. Obama talking about how he doesn't think the government is going to do better than private industry. Can we have the first of those gentlemen?
You know, and as I travel around the country, people aren't just concerned about their immediate circumstances. They're also concerned about our future. And they're thinking, how do we make sure that America stays ahead? How do we make sure that if somebody's willing to work hard, they can get ahead in this country? And people understand, you know, government's not all the answer, and if they see taxpayer money wasted, that makes them angry. And they know that government's got to be lean and mean and do smart things.
Well, yeah, the government is not lean, it's fat. And the government can be mean. It is mean. Mr. Obama, you are a complete phony. Didn't he say something in addition to that, guys? Something in addition, well, government's not the answer to everything, even though he obviously believes it is. That other clip, please.
See, I've never believed that government can or should try to solve every problem we've got. I believe that the free market is the greatest force for economic progress in human history. I agree that everybody has personal responsibility for their own lives. Everybody's got to work hard. Nothing's ever handed to us.
You know, there's so much. There is nothing in that statement that is true. There is nothing that he said that he believes. He believes quite the opposite. Obviously he does, or we would not have all of the regulations pouring out of this administration. How can you stand up, Mr. Obama, with a straight face and say that you don't believe the government should be responsible for everything, that we should have people who are being independent, that we should have people who exercise their own judgment? Why are you saying these things when your government is doing exactly the opposite? How can you have, I'd like to hear from somebody out there who was raised on a farm, maybe learned how to ride a tractor, drive a tractor, at a plant or harvest, at an early age. I mean, this is what kids do. This is how you teach people responsibility. When I was very young, when I was probably, I guess, about 5 years old, my father started teaching me how to shoot. Now, I'm sure at some point, if that were the case today, if I were 5 years old today and my father was still alive and he was trying to teach me how to shoot, he'd probably be arrested. You know, this is the kind of thing where the government is always on your back. No matter what you do, no matter how you say it, this government is trying to regulate every single bit of your life. And this is another example of it. You know, when you have the 4-H or the Future Farmers of America, I would trust them before I trust some darn government bureaucrat to train a kid on how to run a farm machine or how to be safe or the theory of farming. All of these things, these good, rock-solid American values that are really embodied in our farming community, these people work very, very hard. What does a government bureaucrat know about working hard? What does a government bureaucrat know about training people? I guess there might be some by accident. There might be some government bureaucrats who have some familiarity with it and some idea of how you could do something like this. But I just don't believe, ladies and gentlemen, that a 90-hour government course is going to be superior to what 4-H and Future Farmers of America have been teaching these kids for decades, maybe, I don't even know how long, probably a century or more. And now all of a sudden, Hilda Solis and the Department of Labor think they know better. I don't think they know better. I think they have less knowledge. I think they have less training. I think they have less ability. And they don't have the same goals. The goal of the bureaucrat here is to take control of what 4-H is doing. The goal of the bureaucrat here is to supplant what the private sector is doing. The goal of the bureaucrat here is precisely the opposite of what Obama says. Obama says, well, we should have the private sector fully and functioning and free and open. He doesn't believe any of that. And this is the part that proves that I'm right and that he is not telling the truth. Things like this, when you have the 4-H out there about to be put out of the business of teaching farm safety to children and the government imposing its own will instead, I don't get this. I don't think this is going to be right. I think this is the kind of thing that people in the House of Representatives need to step up to. I think everybody in the farm community is probably already outraged about it, but how many of you out there in the farm community have taken action? This rule may very well go into effect, I don't know, next week, week after. The story doesn't say. But this is the kind of thing that people need to be reacting on. This is the kind of thing, again, Mitt Romney needs to be more active on. Mitt Romney needs to be in the forefront of fighting things like this. We should have a statement out of him. When something like this comes up, Mitt Romney should have a statement out immediately. And it wouldn't take much. All you need is a couple of really good staffers and a senior person to sign off on it and somebody to check with Romney, see if it's okay. I mean, he's got the organization to do this, but he needs to be more aggressive. And we need to see more of that from him all of the time, all of the time, all from now to November 6th. All right, 800-449-8255. Let's go back to your calls. Let's go to line four, Dominic in California. Welcome to the Savage Nation, sir. Welcome. Thank you for calling.
Hey, thank you for answering. I'm just wondering why you would push Romney as a person that's going to beat Obama when most of their major views are the same in regards to NDAA, Patriot Act, TARP, and so forth.
How do you figure they're not the same? I mean, Romney is for a stronger defense, the NDAA, the National Defense Authorization Act. I mean, Romney does not want to. Well, wait a minute. National Defense Authorization Act, that's what NDAA is, right?
Correct.
Okay, so what Romney is saying, he doesn't like the idea of $600 billion more in defense spending, and Obama is saying he'll veto anything that changes it. How can you say they're the same?
One of the debates, he actually agreed with the NDAA Act, saying that it was okay. And in regards to TARP, he agreed with that.
Well, wait a minute. The NDAA is different from sequestration. The NDAA, Obama signed. Okay, Obama signs a lot of bills. You can't equate the two of them. Yeah, okay, Romney has made some big mistakes. Romney Care is a disaster. But the fact of the matter is, you can't stand there and tell me that, oh, for example, Romney and Obama would pick the same kind of justices for the Supreme Court. The next president may have two or three picks for the Supreme Court. We can't afford to have Barack Obama making those picks. Dominic?
Not sure why, when also Romney, you're speaking in absolutes as far as he's being the primary candidate for the Republican nominee.
Well, he is the candidate. He is. It's over. It's over, Dominic.
Not all the delegates have been chosen yet.
He doesn't have the 1,144. There is no mathematical chance of anybody catching him. He is the nominee. Nobody is going to be the nominee other than Romney. And, you know, I'm really, ladies and gentlemen, you just have to settle down. You have to think about what you're saying here. Because, and I know you're very smart people, but you have to understand Mitt Romney is the nominee, whether you love him or not. This is a binary choice. You're going to choose Mitt Romney or you're going to have Barack Obama. That's as simple as it gets. There's not going to be a different nominee. He's going to have the 1,144 delegates before he gets to the convention. It's going to be locked up. There's not going to be an open convention. It's going to be a case where Mitt Romney is going to be the nominee, and you're going to either vote for him or vote for Obama or stay home. And if you vote for Obama or if you stay home, it's the same thing. You're going to have a personal responsibility for what happens in the following 4 years, and it's going to be really, really ugly. All right, thanks for calling, Dominic. Let's go to line 7, Dennis in Tennessee. Thanks for calling in, sir. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Jed. Good evening.
Good evening.
I grew up on a farm from about age 12 to 18. It was my neighbor's farm, but I drove tractors at a very young age, and I think it taught me a lot of responsibility about driving in general, and I think it was a very good thing for me.
Well, did you go to 4-H or Future Farmers of America or something like that? Did you take any of their courses?
No, I never did any of that, but I worked on the farm for money. You know, I was wanting the money. So,
well, now if you were that age and, you know, you couldn't do it. This rule goes through. You couldn't even do it on your parents' farm.
I mean, I know. I think it's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, you know, it's just government again. Government, bigger government. The bureaucrats really have been empowered by this administration, Dennis. You know, they know that the president loves them. They know the president's going to give them pay increases. They know that the president really relies on them, and they want more regulations to be. I mean, bureaucrats don't have anything better to do. I mean, this is what they do. They regulate things, whether they know anything about them or not. So this is the kind of intrusion into our lives, the control of our functions as a free society. This is what these guys want to do. So, Dennis, you know, it seems to me you grew up the right way. You had the right plan, and your parents did. Did your parents, I take it your parents probably encouraged you to do all this. You know, God bless you, Dennis. This is the kind of people we need to raise up in this country, ladies and gentlemen. We don't need more bureaucrats. All right, Jed Babin for Michael Savage. Got to take a quick break. Be right back to you. Stick with me. Welcome back, everybody. 800-449-8255. Jed Babin for Michael Savage. And before we go back to the political calls, we're going to have a Wise Food giveaway, the product giveaway. Ladies and gentlemen, two 56-serving emergency grab-and-go food kit valued at $120. It's two servings per day for one adult for 4 weeks, or four adults for 1 week, up to 25-year shelf life, made in the USA. Has things in it like pasta Alfredo, cheesy lasagna, tortilla. This sounds pretty good. Crunchy granola. All right. Well, visit wisefoodstorage.com and get a free sample entree. Enter the promo code SAVAGE to get free shipping on any order. Wisefoodstorage.com or call 855-FOODWISE. And be sure to mention SAVAGE for a free sample and free shipping on any order. Be wise and be ready with wisefoodstorage.com. And if you're any of the first two next callers, let's do that again. The next two callers just will win one of these 56-serving emergency grab-and-go food kits. So get to the phone, 800-449-8255. All right, right back to the political calls. Let's go to line six. Bill in California, you're on the Savage Nation. Welcome to the show, sir.
Yes. Hi, Jed. My name's Bill, and I just want to let you know I, too, from upstate New York originally. And
good on you.
I'm sorry?
Good on you.
Yes, sir. And I just want to let you know that I worked on a dairy farm when I was 9 years old, and I later learned how to not only take care of the cows of 250 dairy, I also worked plowing the fields on a Case tractor with tires about 12 feet high at the age of 13. And you talk about responsibility. It was something else that changed my life up through my teens. And I later actually ended up joining the United States Marine Corps and served for 20 years.
God bless.
You are absolutely 100% right on, and the 4-H Club, outstanding organization for the youth.
Well, thank you, Bill, very much for that call. And ladies and gentlemen, this is exactly what we're talking about. Bill was raised the right way. He learned responsibility. He learned skills. And he didn't have to rely on a government bureaucrat for it. Bill, who taught you how to drive the tractor? Was it your dad or somebody else?
Actually, it was my neighbor's. It was a good friend of mine. His father, it was his farm. My mother and father, originally from Brooklyn, family of 10, we moved upstate. And he was a friend of mine. And I learned a trade, and I learned even the care of taking care of cows. And even at the age of 15 to 18, before I left for the Corps, he and I were in charge of just taking care of the whole dairy farm. Unbelievable.
Wow. Well, but you learn the responsibilities, you learn the skills. You grew up the right way, Bill. And I think that's
Absolutely.
What bothers that what bothers the bureaucracy. They don't like people being independent. They don't like people having a life that they don't control. You know, you probably learned better and faster and probably had a lot more fun than you're sitting in a 90-hour class taught by a bureaucrat about farm safety. Ladies and gentlemen, Jed Babin for Dr. Michael Savage. Really enjoyed my time with you today. Hope to be back soon. This is the Savage Nation. Check out michaelsavage.com. Jed Babin for Michael. Good night. Savage.